Okay, and here we are, back hour number two. Glad you're along tonight. We're going to change gears this hour and take a look above. Well, sometimes at eye level, down on the ground as well. George Filer is here for the second time this month. There's a lot going on, and I thought we might just kind of break the angst a little bit. This Ukraine thing is very discouraging, and we need a change of pace. So George was kind enough to come on tonight and do just that. If you look at the top headline under the Fukushima update box in the center column at Rents, you will find Filer's issue number 19, 2014, More Flying Triangles and Bright Lights. Hello, George. Thanks for being here. How are you?
You're welcome. It's a beautiful day in New Jersey.
Now, you live in Medford, New Jersey, right? Right near there?
Yes.
It's interesting. I'm not far away from Medford, Oregon. See, I knew something we had in common was undiscovered. There it is.
Yes. We're having pretty good weather. Not like we had during the winter. It's nice weather.
It's supposed to stay nice
now?
Everything
is going well.
You're okay. All right. Well, good.
Actually, I don't know if I should announce it, but my granddaughter was just given a contract to be a model in New York City. She's only 14, but she's very beautiful. She takes after me, you know.
Of course. And who is going to take care of this young lady in New York City?
Well, her mother. Her mother.
Take her up and bring her back for various photography shoots and things.
Right.
Well, that's congratulations. That's very exciting. As long as you take care of that girl, it's a very, very vicious world up there.
Well, I am a little frightened by that, but at least it's a great opportunity for her.
Oh, come on, it's a career. It's a career maker, and absolutely. Well, good. Good for you.
I should probably put her picture on my website.
Well, wait till she gets some professional work done, then put it up.
Right. Yeah. I'll have to get permission on it.
You will.
In any case, that was good news for today, so I mentioned.
Well, very nice. Congratulations. You deserve it. That's very nice. 14-year-old granddaughter on the way to the Big Apple. Well, okay. Well, as long as Mom is there and takes good care of her, that's the key. Never let her out of her sight. It's a word to the wise. Yeah. Okay. We have issue. George Filer, by the way, in case you don't know, George is with us once a month on the first Tuesday of each month, and he's here on the third Tuesday of each month this month. Now, actually, it's the second Wednesday. Time flies, but let's not push it. Okay, so George has a newsletter that comes out once a week, and you can get it free. It is a beautifully produced UFO weekly report called Filer's Files, full of pictures, full of stories, full of special historical retrospectives, overviews. He highlights very interesting stories and people, and we can go look at number 19, just so you'll know, and that's why I had James put it up there. Just look right below the latest Fukushima updates box at the top center column at Rents, and you'll see it. Filer's number 19, 2014, More Flying Triangles and Bright Lights. And we tried to find 20, but I guess 20 is not yet.
Well, I sent it. Hopefully it'll come in.
Send it to me or send it to James? Or?
Well, it was sent out. I don't know if it reached you.
All right. So you did try to send it to me.
Right.
All right. I'll keep looking. In number 19, we'll start with 19 for the moment here. You can begin to scroll down there, and he's got one of his really well-done special reports. Now, George used to brief some of the top military brass on the issue of unidentified flying objects. I mean, he's been in this a long time. Very honored to have him, of course, as part of the community, a pillar of the community, in fact. So you've got a special report on General George S. Brown. Who's General Brown?
Well, General Brown, at the time I was with him, was the commander of the 7th Air Force in Vietnam. But later he became the head of the Air Force and then chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff.
That all?
He was, was his top, as good as you can get in the military, so to speak. And he was a very nice gentleman, friendly with me, but every morning, 8 o'clock or so, I would go in and kind of do the news report, so to speak, of what was going on in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, mostly it was about the war and what the communists were doing, that kind of thing. But occasionally we did have reports of UFOs or, you know, unidentified flying objects at the cruiser report. And, of course, we told him about it.
Mm-hmm.
And even in his autobiography, he mentioned it. He said something in effect in his autobiography. I don't know whether this story has been told or not. They weren't called UFOs. Actually, on occasion, I called them helicopters or UFOs. They were called enemy helicopters, and they were only seen at night, and they were only seen in certain places, usually up near the DMZ. So, we
but did the
sure.
enemy have helicopters in
yes.
service at night there?
Well, they had helicopters that could fly at night, so there's some question of what, you know, what they really were.
Mm-hmm.
And this resulted in quite a little battle at one time. And in any case, an Australian destroyer was off the coast and took a hit, and we never found out if any enemy did it. In other words, a helicopter attacked or a UFO or whatever. But in any case, there was lots of excitement going on that we briefed about. It was kind of one interesting story is when I first went in to brief him the first time,
mm-hmm.
he wrote me a note and said, it's all right if you wear your glasses, which I thought was kind of funny.
That is funny. Did you save that note?
No, I didn't save it. I was a little embarrassed at the time, because I guess I was squinting or whatever when I was trying to read.
I get it. So, okay. Now, we've heard stories over the years about UFOs and Vietnam, and some of them are very compelling. Very interesting, intriguing stories. I don't know if they're true or not, but I'm sure you heard them all when you.
Well,
were
I've heard them, but at least when I was in a, you know, position getting intelligence and so on, I didn't hear those kind of stories.
Mm-hmm.
You might call them the wild stories.
Mm-hmm.
But the crews fairly regularly, you know, 3 or 4 times a month would report that they had seen unidentified flying objects, but. We didn't see what they saw, but obviously
right.
it didn't look like a normal aircraft, and they were reporting what they had seen. It's not as unusual as the public might think. And, you know, we're running about 50 UFO reports a day in the United States. Now, obviously, some people are mistaken, you know. But we figured about a third of what the air crews saw were real alien UFOs. In other words, not ours.
One third.
And with the public, it's probably quite a bit less than that. But for the sake of argument, you know, if even 10 a day are real out of our 50 reports. It certainly indicates that somebody's here. Somebody's around it. And like President Reagan said in the 42nd General Assembly of the United Nations, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? And I happen to think that there is an alien force among us. And I think the President was right when he brought that up at the United Nations. People are not aware of those kind of statements, but there's plenty of them from very high-ranking people all through the years. And one of the reasons I put out my files is that the public is just not aware of the information. You're doing a wonderful job getting it out there, and, you know, a few other people are. But basically, the information is not available to the public.
Correct. Absolutely. All right, we're going to take a break and come right back. And when we come back, George, being a U.S. Air Force major, I want to get your opinion about this, which may be the biggest boondoggle in aircraft design and thought and construction in American Air Force or aviation history. The F-35, a big, fat, flopping turkey coming in at $1.5 trillion. Be right back in a minute with George. Following the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter debacle, you'll understand much of this already. This and the F-22 have turned out to be two grievously troubled aircraft design and construction projects. This, first of all, the F-22, nice idea, high performance, aerial superiority, but there's a problem. They can't get enough oxygen to the pilots, and they tend to black out. No one seems to have been able to solve this quickly and easily at all. It's still a problem, from my understanding of it. Now, that's the F-22, the Raptor. The F-35, and I'm going to let George talk about this, but here's my pedestrian, non-military civilian side of it. The F-35 Joint Strike Fighter was an attempt to be all things for all branches of the military, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force. It couldn't serve any master. It was given the task of serving too many masters. It is a flying turkey. The wings are too small to engage in efficient dogfighting. It is said that a 1950s vintage MiG-21 could shoot it down rather routinely in a dogfight. It is also a plane that is designed to vertically take off and land, so the fans, of course, have to blow the air down, and that's one of the reasons for the narrow wings. The other problem is one that it was not supposed to ever encounter, and that's being able to be observed on radar. It was supposed to be a superior stealth jet fighter. Again, it is a turkey. George, tell us more, please. This is $1.5 trillion wasted.
Well, I don't think it's wasted in that sense. That
what are we going to do with it?
It is apparently not very stealthy. That new Russian and Chinese radars, according to Aviation Week, can pick it up. And
well, big problem.
That is a problem, but we can pick up their aircraft too. So it's a question of, you know.
I read a story. Let me just dump this in. Written, in fact, I ran a story. It was a video by the designer, one of the designers of the plane, and he said it was just, it was a catastrophe, basically. I'll see if I can find that video. Go ahead.
Well, they
tell
may have done, tried to do too much, you know. With
that's exactly what the implication is, yeah.
That, you know, engineering design is difficult in a lot of ways. And apparently they weren't allowed to use some of this new capabilities that...
What do you mean they weren't allowed to use?
Well, I mean, it's still a jet aircraft. It's not any, anti-gravity aircraft.
Well, this was supposed to be the last in the line of manned jet fighters, I think, wasn't it? They were going to go to drone, remote control, bring in other technologies that you're alluding to that are not common knowledge.
Well, the F-22 was supposed to be a much better aircraft, and they decided it was costing too much money. And, of course, there was the oxygen problems and other problems that you frequently have with a new aircraft that they usually are able to fix, you know, eventually. But they cut the number built way down and said they were going to go to an F-35, which we admit is not as good an aircraft, but is much cheaper. Well, it turned out that the F-35 is costing as much, if not more, than the F-22, and we have a lesser aircraft, and they're trying to put together, you know, takeoff for the Marines.
VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing.
Ships, vertical takeoff, from, you know, right. Going off in ships and so on. And trying to put all this in one aircraft, I think, in retrospect, may have been a mistake.
I think it doesn't even take retrospect. You can look at it today, but you're quite right. They're stuck here. This plane can't dogfight. It can't hide from radar. It's slow. It's the wings had to be small because of the VTOL. It's a problem. Big, big problem. Now, they're stuck with this, and they can't just say, whoops.
The pilots are saying that the headrest is too large and that when they go to look to the rear...
You got no rear vision. They have no rear vision to speak of. That's right. Now, how stupid, how many years have we been designing aircraft, for goodness sakes, 100 years? How stupid to build a headrest and not even think about a pilot's ability to be able to turn around and see what the heck's behind him. I mean, this is nuts. What, are they going to put a little camera in the back now so he can just look out, I guess, out the back with a camera? They'll have to.
Carry your own.
Yeah, let me turn around so I can see what's behind me. Hold up a mirror. I mean, this is nuts. So who's going to be held to account for this? Mr. Nobody again? Yeah, that's right.
Well, hopefully they'll get the problem solved that... people in the aviation companies are pretty smart people. I think they'll eventually solve the problem. Then if it isn't good enough, they'll probably decide to build a new one.
Well, we've got plenty of money, right? What the heck?
Well, we seem to be running out.
Well, I think as long as they have the ability to push keys on a keyboard with a modem, they're not going to run out. And here's a little short video from this is interesting. One of the designers, so we'll listen to what he has to say. This is a very, very accomplished aircraft designer talking about the
Marines have this, you know, mindless passion now recently for vertical takeoff airplanes, ever since they got the British Harrier. Well, that makes the airplane very fat, because you have to have a lift fan in the center of the airplane to blow air vertically to make it take off.
Talking about the F-35.
Right. So now you have a great big fat center section. Now you have too much drag. It turned out they put on tiny wings, which helps it to take off vertically, but means it can't maneuver in combat. You know, you need wings to create lift to turn. No wing, no turn. And so the airplane is astonishingly unmaneuverable, you know, because it has to carry 108 pounds of airplane per square foot of wing.
So in air-to-air combat, in dogfighting?
In dogfighting, it's hopeless. You can guarantee that a 1950s-designed MiG-21 or French Mirage would just hopelessly whip the F-35.
So if the F-35 is not a fine combat plane, what about as support for troops?
And we ran out of tape there. But you got the picture. Now, that was from a very, very well-accomplished and respected aircraft designer who was eminently familiar with the F-35 project. That's a pretty bad condemnation, George. We'll come back and get your opinion on that in just a minute. Hang on. Back after this. Okay, back with George Filer. So we're talking briefly here about the F-35, which is, I don't know how you can repair a plane that has such really gross defects, George. This is not an easy fix. This is a real tough one. Why they abandoned the F-22, I don't understand. They should have, that was aerodynamically and all the rest of it, apparently a very, very fine aircraft. This is not a very fine aircraft.
Well, hopefully they can fix the problems.
Yes, I agree. I'm with you.
They may have to put in larger wings or whatever.
Well, they're going to have to junk the VTOL entirely. That would be one possibility. I don't know much about aircraft design, but listen again to this, okay? This is.
I know they're having a lot of software problems with
mindless.
That.
Yeah, here. Now listen. This guy says the Marine. This is an aircraft engineer. All right. He doesn't care for the Marines and their VTOL hang-up.
Mm-hmm. The Marines have this, mindless passion now, recently. For vertical takeoff airplanes, ever since they got the British Harrier. Well, that makes the airplane very fat, because you have to have a lift fan in the center of the airplane to blow air vertically, to make it take off vertically or land vertically. So now you have a great big fat center section. Now you have too much drag. It turned out they put on tiny wings, which helps it to take off vertically, but means it can't maneuver in combat. You need wings to create lift to turn. No wing, no turn. And so the airplane is astonishingly unmaneuverable.
Astonishing.
Because it has to carry 108 pounds of airplane per square foot of wing.
So in air-to-air combat, in dogfighting?
In dogfighting, it's hopeless.
Hopeless.
You can guarantee that a 1950s designed
B-21
or French Mirage would just hopelessly whip the F-35.
Hopelessly whip the F-35. Not encouraging, George. He's not mincing words there. He's telling it like it is.
They may have to develop tactics, kind of like hit and run.
Like leave them parked on the ground.
Hopefully their long-range missiles and radar will be better than the opposing aircraft.
Well, that wasn't the idea of the whole aircraft. Ground support, okay. The A-10 will do just as good a job, maybe better.
Well, probably.
The A-10 is a cannon with an aircraft built around it, and it's all incredibly wasteful. Incredibly wasteful. Anyway, okay, let's go back to Filer's Files, issue number 19, and see what we can see here. All right. You're with George. Just look at the top in the center column at rents for number 19. You'll see it there right under the Fukushima box. Just scroll down there and we'll go past General Brown. And we see There's the SR-72. Now, that apparently is a reasonable artist concept of what our hypersonic, unmanned, I assume this is unmanned, successor to the SR-71 is, correct?
Yeah. I don't know how accurate the pictures are, but, you know.
Well, they look good.
Aviation Week and so on, or somebody's seen one and made a difference. A drawing of it that the whole triangle situation that I reported regularly indicates some kind of advanced probably anti-gravity system operating it. So at least I feel some are alien, but probably some are our own. I don't know why they keep on trying to keep all these things secret. They've been around for 20, 30 years. They have the black budget and the, you know, the open budget.
Right.
Keep a lot of things secret. People say, oh, they can't keep them secret. Well, they kept the F-117 secret for 10 years. They keep a lot of things secret if they want to.
Well, what are they doing here? Do they want to keep this secret or not? Reading your story here, they're talking about a triangular-shaped craft reported to be hovering over Boston a few days ago. And your text is very revealing. It says, right? Should the government be flying these things around people like this, over cities? Why? After all, allowing a top-secret craft to deliberately hover low over Boston on a Saturday night to be seen in all of its glory is totally absurd. Such an event goes against the basic rules of any playbook for black-budget projects. The damn thing should be out west someplace, Area 51, maybe, not shocking the early-night bar crowd in Boston. All right? And so it goes. A hype of UFO is witnessed, but only civilians take notice. I don't necessarily agree that that craft was ours. What commanding officer in his right mind who has overseen an anti-grav, if that's what it was, ours, triangular craft, would allow that craft to hover over Boston?
Well, it's always the possibility that pilots were, you know, having a good time.
It's always a possibility that it wasn't ours, too, correct?
Well, that's the more likely possibility, I think, that it was not ours. That, you know, I've chased some of these craft, and I'm convinced at least some are not ours, certainly.
Well, I agree with you. Logical, common sense deductions point to that direction. There are too many different shapes, sizes, and kinds, and behaviors. And look, if they want to play the Trump card and pretend we're being invaded by E.T., okay, fly them over cities, fly them to scare people. But it makes no sense when you've got one or two items that you've spent probably a trillion or more on over how many years building them to fly them over a city. What if it had a mechanical malfunction and fell down over a city or an urban area? End of story, end of secret. You got casualties, you got a problem. So anyway, we're looking at issue number 19 with George. More strange pictures to look at in a few minutes. Hang on just a couple minutes and we'll be right back. Okay, back to George Filer, looking at issue number... a jet just flew by. Looking at issue number 19, Kansas Triangle. Now, this does appear to be something that we may have. It's flying high. It has been seen and recorded and photographed several times. It is a perfect triangle, but it's leaving a contrail behind it, which suggests strongly, obviously, that it is being powered by some kind of professional ramjet design, something like that. It's leaving an exhaust. It's a perfect triangle, though. It's very interesting. The Horton brothers would be very proud, I'm sure.
Right. Well, there are lots of aircraft that fly over. I happen to have a friend that works at the Philadelphia Airport, says that their radar regularly picks up high-flying, very high-speed craft, you know, 10,000 miles an hour or whatever, going over on a regular basis, and that nobody says too much about it, obviously, but there's something up there going very fast. It might be ours. It might be somebody else.
Could
One
the
thing
Russians...
about the triangles that bother me, when they're way high, that's no problem, but when they're at a, you know, 1,000 feet or so on, there's a certainly a chance of safety problems. You know?
Well, you got a deer hunter out there with a good rifle, and he could cause some serious trouble if they get too low.
They shot at the one in Texas a few years ago. The point is that occasionally they do get shot at.
Mm-hmm.
People get frightened or just want to see if they can hit it or whatever.
Right.
So it is kind of a question of why are these things flying around so low? Just often we get reports over major highways just flying, you know, like 1,000 feet above it.
Right down the highway, yeah.
Difficult to tell the size of an aircraft in the sky, you know, unless you have something to compare it with. But
yeah.
In other words, it might be really down low, we'll say 100 feet, and look huge, or it could be up at 5,000 feet and appear smaller. But in any case, we get the reports on a regular basis. And it's not only this country. We get it, obviously, in Belgium and the UK, where they launch fighters and stuff and try to intercept them. If they're successful, they have not revealed that to the public. I've, you know, attempted to intercept them, and whenever you get close, they have the ability to either hide themselves or just go away at such high speed that there's no chance that you can catch them.
Right. Now, my next, we only have a few minutes left, but I don't want to pass this by. This is a superb candidate for Photoshop. The Puerto Rico disc base story, which is right down toward the bottom of Filer's Files number 19. This is a beautiful picture. Almost looks like it's done by a professional photographer with the tree on the left and the huge craft, a disc-shaped craft, allegedly, in Puerto Rico. And the question I have is that what Puerto Rico looks like? I don't think so. Now, is this picture supposedly representative of what was seen on El Yunque?
It's a rendering by Ken Pfeiffer, my director of investigations in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Who has a great site with numerous pictures on it.
Yeah.
But some are drawings, you know, representations, Photoshop, that kind of thing.
Okay.
This is his concept.
Okay.
Right. That's probably not a good rendering of Puerto Rico.
It doesn't look like Puerto Rico at all. So I don't want you to folks think that this is a photograph taken by somebody on an iPhone. Freddie and his wife.
That's why we say it's a rendering. You know?
Right. Freddie and his... Here's the report from El Yunque. Yunque. Freddie and his wife and their young child were taking a drive around the rainforest on Route 191 in Puerto Rico and took a turn inadvertently deep into the forest in February 1991. They drove through a camouflaged gate deep in the forest and drove for two more miles along a road lit by blue lights. They came to a large metal gate and a building and were stopped by two small man-like figures and asked who they were. The men wore tight-fitting black one-piece suits with dark oval-shaped helmets with dark visors. In eerie metallic electronic-sounding voices, the strangers ordered the couple to step out of the car. They examined their vehicle and asked how they got there and then held a conversation in a guttural language. A blue truck now arrived with two men wearing blue coveralls, and also asked how they got there. Freddie noticed a rectangular-shaped hollowed-out area in a nearby hill with a huge glass-like set of doors. Inside, there was a metallic disc 30 feet in diameter that was encircled with windows. The men did not appear to notice that Freddie had seen something and then ordered them to follow them out of the area. All right. They were escorted out to the main road. Note the above image is a rendering, as George says. Ken Pfeiffer, MUFON, New Jersey, did that. Okay, well, that's a 1992 story. Doesn't mean it's right. Not valid. We don't know. But,
I don't know about that specific story, but I have a number of... but it sounds interesting, but my field investigator... Actually, state director in Puerto Rico, also worked for the FBI. But he was bored with the job that he was doing. They were checking in banks all the time. So he became a field investigator, and he would go out and get these stories. And he got many stories very similar to that. And frequently, the report was that the UFO was going into the water, into lakes, or into the ocean off the coast. In any case, there's a lot of activity in Puerto Rico, so this story is not surprising. Also, those mountains on Puerto Rico have vast caverns in them. And
correct.
We get reports of the UFOs flying into the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite likely that they're inside the caverns. So I thought this was an interesting report because it tends to prove some of the other reports that we get.
Yeah. Puerto Rico has been really a very good location for sighting all kinds of things, from UFOs to chupacabras. They have it all down there.
Yeah, he investigated quite a few chupacabras. Which is a little animal-like thing, and it's hard to describe because people have different descriptions of it, but in any case, it kills other animals. And, but he visited, well, he spoke Spanish, you know, and visited many farmers and had seen that their hens and roosters and stuff were all ripped up and dead and so on. He was convinced there was something going on there as well. Now, whether this has anything to do with UFOs, we don't know for sure. But we do get reports of, UFOs landing and strange creatures getting out. Like that.
Not terribly uncommon, agreed. A lot of them in England. We've got some amazing reports from there. It's rather embarrassing in a way, because there is so much going on overhead. ISS pictures now coming back, streaming live. I've seen things that are, inexplainable, unexplainable, and yet to be explained. So, a lot of things going on.
Two sets of pictures from Malaysia, which are very interesting. Kuala Lumpur. Of any case, two different photographers took essentially the same picture of a disc over the Capitol.
How far apart were the photographers?
Well, it was it looked like they were, you know, a block or two or more. They had different angles on the high-rise buildings, you know, some of the towers there that are, I don't know if they're the tallest in the world or the, some of the tallest. In any case, they're also in the picture. When you get 20, you'll see it. I don't know. It should be out, but my webmaster may have not sent it to you yet.
No, I didn't get it yet. So we'll look for that.
But
we'll
I'm happy to send it to anyone where, I don't know.
Now, if you'd like to receive George's really wonderfully produced Filer's Files every week, free, no charge, to your electronic mailbox, all you have to do is ask. Just write to George at M-A-J-O-R, Major, Star, Major Star, at Verizon.net. Same old address, but wonderful new information every week in Filer's Files. So, by all means. How many subscribers now, George?
Around 12,000.
Well, let's get that thing up to 13.
Right.
All right. Well, good job. Thanks so much for being here, George, as always. We appreciate it.
Anytime. Right. I'm always happy to do it.
Okay. Thanks much. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, that's hour number two, and we'll be back with Gentleman Jim Mars and the view from Mars in just a few minutes.